Okay, so as I mentioned in the intro, we have two special guests in our studio today. They're representatives from Citizens for Social Morality. We've got Dolores here. Say hi. And we've got Amal as well in studio.
Hello, everybody.
So welcome to the show, and as Laura mentioned, throughout the show, if there's any points that you want to bring up in the discussion, you can feel free to call in, and we'll see if we can get you in on this discussion. But we wanted to ask these two representatives from CFSM about the work that they're doing and latest events. So I'm going to start just by asking you guys to explain that there's an event coming up that's organized by the Advisory Committee for Child and Youth Services, which I believe you guys are founding, if not the founding group of. So maybe tell us a little bit about what this group is about, why it was started, and let people know, you know, how they can get involved.
Well, we started out as the Citizens for Social Morality. And we realized that we were a small splinter group in the province. We had to figure out how we were going to be heard in Queen's Park. So we formed this umbrella agency called Advisory Committee for Child and Youth Services, which was designed to bring together all the parent groups in Ontario, and perhaps maybe all of Canada. I really feel that this is a movement that will sweep across Canada and the U.S., that parents coming together and saying to government that we are the taxpayers, we are the voters, we demand input into the legislation that affects our children and to the health, education, and social programs that government formulates. Unless parents speak up and take back the rights that they have lost to government, parents will simply be regarded as incubators by the government, that their children will really belong to the state. Already Canada views children as crown wards, and that the government gives the right to parents to parent their children. There's a move that's gone on to give children individual rights separate from their parents. At 12, a child can sign their legal consents. They can do almost anything. The parent has been marginalized. Under the law, the rights of the child are not separate from that of the parent, but intimately intertwined with the parent and must be balanced under the law. To separate the rights of children from the rights of parents will marginalize parents. Over time, the rights of parents have been eroded. And because they've been eroded, they've had less input into what happens to their children. If we don't speak up and start to take back our rights to our biologic children, then our children will become the property of the state.
Now, the current child welfare legislation came into effect in Ontario, at least, in 1999. Maybe you could go over for listeners, we had covered this issue a while back, but maybe you could go over again some of the major aspects that they should be aware of how this legislation affects families and how it turns social workers and others into literally police having to take children from families they consider neglect. So maybe give us a sense of how this legislation works, how it defines neglect, those kind of things.
Well, I first became aware of it when the lawyers said to me the law went too far in 1999. The pendulum swung too in favor of the society and against parents. At first, I thought it was an accident that somebody wrote this piece of legislation not knowing what was going to happen. But then, as I read the handserts from the legislature, I realized that the Liberals, that the NDP, and that the Conservatives all knew that children who did not need to be apprehended were going to be apprehended, that innocent families were going to be destroyed, that this piece of legislation would cost the taxpayers of Ontario billions of dollars. And yet they knew when the law was passed. It was passed on the last day of 1999 of the Harris government. It was passed without any public input. Despite the protest of Howard Hampton, who pleaded for the Aboriginals to be treated more leniently, it was passed, and the results are what we have today. Essentially, it set the standard for apprehension, the bar for apprehension, too low. It defined causes for apprehension that included neglect as well as harm. The previous piece of legislation said required substantial harm. This piece of legislation required harm. Harm and neglect was not defined. It was left very vague. Almost anything that a parent does can be interpreted by someone as neglect or harm.
Give us an example, if you could, like how this plays out in real life in terms of what they call neglect and harm.
Well, say you send your child to school with a lettuce sandwich. That may be considered neglectful by someone.
Seeking help from hospital. I'm sorry to interrupt. Seeking help, going to the hospital, seeking help, it's called neglect. That's exactly what happened in my case.
Why don't you tell us what you mean by that? What took place?
I had a striking grief, and I went to the hospital. And in my grieving time, I didn't speak, I couldn't talk, but I was aware of everything that's going on. A social worker from CAS had signed my emergency record. I find out that later on. I was defined as neglected mother by seeking help from the hospital. When the hospital arranged a meeting in the board with them, with me and them, and they were asking me, what do you want? Anything you want, just we're sorry for what had happened. My lawyer had asked them specifically on the table, could you please, under the law, underline for me, where is it that you saw necessarily for you to go and interfere with her kids? They said neglect. Simply by seeking help at the hospital, the social worker at the crisis, the social crisis center worker at the hospital had defined me a neglected mom and serious mental health problems. Therefore, they had the right to interfere and question my kids.
How common is this in your experience? You guys, I know, have been working for it's almost over a year now?
Quite, almost a year.
Almost a year on this. So what kind of other, is this prevalent, that what Amal is talking about, this kind of use of the term neglect to criminalize families?
Well, if you say to your child, if you lose your temper with your child and say something that might be interpreted as not the most appropriate thing to say, that's emotional abuse. And what parent in this day and time doesn't sometimes lose it with their child? They get accused of neglect. The law, as it's written, left the definitions of neglect and harm very vague and subject to interpretation. It also provided no accountability, that people could come in and create havoc in your home and not be held accountable.
Yes, that's right.
Now, who decides what is neglect and what isn't? So, Amal, you give us your example, but in general, how, under the legislation, who is it that's empowered to make these decisions?
Well, the social workers who are often in their early 20s, who have no life experience, who have no children, someone in the community finds a reason, whether they have a grudge against you or whether they're in the school system and some issue arises that your child is misbehaving, that the legislation requires everyone to report under penalty or loss of license. And so even
So you mean that basically what you're saying is that anyone who's a professional could lose their, is it they could lose their designation as a professional if they don't report?
Their license or be subject to substantial fine. So everyone is reporting everything for fear of loss of license or fine. And a lot of red flags are being sent up on people who are really quite innocent. And say your child goes to school and has fallen and skinned their knee. That prompts an investigation. Even though the child says, I fell and skimmed my knee, you know, it still prompts an investigation. Because the people who do the reporting cannot think on their own. They have to report to the agency, and the agency conducts this investigation.
Okay. I want to get now into a bit of going to the current. Did you want to take a quick break?
No, I actually just wanted to mention for anyone out there who wants to ask any questions or wants to participate in this, the numbers again in Windsor, 971-3630, and in Detroit, 960-6112, extension 3630.
Okay, now, I understand that that this legislation, which you've kind of talked about, is coming up for review. I think every 5 years that it's supposed to come for review. So, first of all, what has been the response that you've gotten to your demands to change this legislation? And secondly, if you could tell us a little bit more about the action that is being planned coming up to try to push this process a little further and get the voices of families heard.
Well, the minister Marie Butriani understands that the problem lies with the act, that the act is flawed. She also understands that the funding formula by which Children's Aid Societies of Ontario are reimbursed has encouraged this apprehension of children. The funding formula rewards children being taken instead of families being helped. The process is costing them billions of dollars. In the reform of the legislation, they are talking about eliminating the family court process and replacing it with counseling and mediation.
Now that's a proposal under the review right now?
Right. And counseling and mediation, to me, can be misused. It can be a bureaucrat rubber stamping the apprehension. There will be no due process for families. Unless families speak up and demand input into the revision legislation, they will be forced to live under a very restrictive environment.
Why do you think they want to get rid of the family court system?
It's costing them billions of dollars. That the reform in 1999 is costing taxpayers of Ontario $1.5 billion this year. The costs will continue to go up exponentially. The government has to get rid of the liabilities, the children that they've apprehended, so they want to adopt them all away. Secondly, the group homes that came in under the Harris government were very costly, so they want to eliminate those and put them into regular foster care, which is cheaper.
And what's regular foster care versus the
family-based foster care?
Okay, with a foster family as opposed to like a group home.
And I think that was probably the issue in the attack on the CAS building, the withdrawal of funding from these privatized group homes. And thirdly, they want to eliminate the family court process, which is costing them billions, because the families are going to court and fighting for their children. The denial of the legal process is a very serious thing. I am convinced that we're headed toward a fascist state.
So now your organization has an action coming up to bring these issues to the public and to really participate in this review. Why don't you tell us, give us first the information about that action and how people can get involved, and then maybe after we take a little break we can talk a little bit more of what you're hoping to accomplish with the action and where you think things are heading in the next period.
Well, we put out the call for all the family groups in Ontario to join under our umbrella and meet at Queen's Park on Wednesday, February 16th, between 12:30 and 2:30. It will be preceded by a press conference at Queen's Park. We want to call attention to the upcoming review of the legislation and that parental input is essential. We also want to call for a Royal Commission of Inquiry to look how the present legislation misfired and involved many innocent Ontario families in the criminal justice system, that families and children were destroyed by this piece of legislation.
Okay, so anyway, that's quite a hefty demand and looks quite good in terms of the Royal Commission. These things definitely need to be investigated if they're be to to be corrected. So on that note, we're going to take a quick break and come back and talk a little bit more about the future of the fight for family rights and for the rights of the youth in this province and in this country. Again, if you want to call in during the break and ask a question or give a comment to our guest, to the show, you can do so at 971-3630. So we'll be back in a few moments. So again, if you'd like to call in, 971-3630. So we're back here with Dolores and Amal. And for this part of the show, we're going to switch focus a bit. And we want to talk a little bit about accountability. So maybe if you could tell us some of the... Well, you in your flyer, it says that in 1990, that Canada had signed the UN Convention of the Child. What was this commitment that Canada made to the children, and how is that playing out today?
Well, the UN Convention of the Child was designed to ameliorate the status of children in Canada. It was to improve child poverty. Every year since 1990, the reports on child poverty in Canada show it to be increasing because children are being raised by single parents without spousal support, and children are marginalized. So the UN Convention of the Child says that children, all children, should be entitled to health, education, social services, to the housing, and daycare, you know, so that their mothers can safely go to work. Canada has repeatedly, selectively implemented the Convention of the Child. Canada in 1990 was a signatory to the convention. The U.S., on the other hand, did not sign the convention. It was skeptical about signing on to it. Canada promised by signing that it would provide all these things, all these rights to children. It was part of the move to give children individual rights, separate from the parent. Canada does not provide every child with these services. It only provides these services to children without parents. So, for instance, in this community, where there is no children's mental health services, only children without parents are entitled to children's mental health services. In order to access these services, you have to terminate your child.
So, based on that, what are some of the things that you think this government in Ontario and also federally could be doing to realize some of the things in the convention and also to really assist families, as opposed to what you've described, which is to pay money into a system of child theft and child negation? So maybe tell us what your organization looks for the future of, you know, what this government should be doing.
Services for children should follow the child, regardless of parental status. That's a principle that this government should be functioning under. It should not be functioning on the premise that you take the child to provide services. That's theft.
No, it's a very good point there, Dolores, I think. And I think that that's the reason why I think a lot of families are really gravitating towards this work, because they see that it's only together, by being together and for fighting for their rights, that they can defend their children and defend their families. So congratulations definitely to the two of you on the work that you've done. It looks like this event in Toronto is going to be a great success. Just the fact that it's happening is in itself a great success, bringing together all these groups. So maybe if you could close by telling us a little bit about how people could get in touch with you if they wanted to come up to Toronto, because I know that you're calling on everyone to come, and we hope that listeners, if you've been moved by what you've heard, or if you think that it's important, if you have experiences with Children's Aid, with the Children's Child and Family Services Act, definitely get in touch with CFSM, get in touch with Dolores and Amal, and see if you can help out. So maybe just... Sorry, I've talked a little bit too much there, but tell us a little bit about how they can get in touch with you.
Well, first of all, I want to state that the Child and Family Service Act review is only the beginning. That, you know, parents have to speak out and want input in the things that affect their children, both educationally, health-wise, and social services-wise. This is only the beginning shot from our organization. If people want to come with us to Toronto, they can either call me at 735-7818 or email at 948-4744. We will be glad to help them find transportation to Toronto.
Just something which we actually didn't add throughout the show, but Citizens for Social Morality has been holding regular pickets outside the office of Sandra Pupatello as well during the last year, and in the course of that has involved a lot of people, even people walking by who have heard what's happening in this whole struggle. So this isn't just coming out of nowhere, that there's a lot of work that's been gone into this, and we congratulate you and thank you, obviously, on that work. So we appreciate you coming on the show again. And anytime you want to come on, it's no problem. We're a vessel for the information that you want to provide. We'll hopefully be able to cover information after the rally. I know we're going to get some audio and recordings of the speeches that take place, and we'll play them on the air. So we encourage everyone the week after the event to listen into MLPC Radio for full coverage of the events in Toronto.